Thank you. It's very interesting to hear this last presentation on Taiwan, because so many of the issues around postpartum seclusion, I think many of you have worked in other countries. It's fairly common practice, and it's interesting to see it looked at so closely. So I'm going to present a paper that actually was initially written by a student at the University of Washington. I teach there, and she was a student, finished last year. She's currently in Ethiopia, actually, as doing a CDC fellowship. Her name is Rebecca Mikeson. I'm going to talk about some work that she did related to domestic violence in Timor-Leste. What do I do, Andrew? I guess, yeah. I have no relationships to disclose. So I think we probably are all aware that intimate partner violence, also called domestic violence, is a pretty major problem around the world. Estimates are about 35% internationally, sort of an average of women have experienced it during their lifetime. And the area of South and East Asia has even somewhat higher rates at about 38%. Do I have a mouse here? Yeah. So right here, I just want to show you where Timor-Leste is. It's just this tiny little half island north of Australia that we're going to talk about. So we know that, I'll keep my hands back. There have been a lot of studies on what are the effects of intimate partner violence on women. We know that it's basically a violation of their human rights, and it also has, in many cases, documented effects on their reproductive and maternal health condition. Specifically, intimate partner violence, that is physical or sexual violence against a woman, studies showing it has a negative association with unplanned pregnancy, abortion, lack of proper prenatal care, miscarriage, etc. And then there's a kind of a linked behavior that often coexists, considered partners or marital control, a partner's very controlling behavior, which often has also been shown to have effects on sexual and reproductive control and access to health care. So we're going to look at this issue in this little country of Timor-Leste. Timor is a small half island, just a million population, a little over a million. One of the poorest economies, I think it's the poorest economy in this part of Asia. And they have a very heavy history of a lot of violence within the population. They were under an extremely violent rule by Indonesian military, an occupation by Indonesian military for 24 years, and then when the Indonesian military were forced to leave, they had another 2 years under UN control and became only independent about a little over 10 years ago. Now, how did that happen? In terms of maternal health and basically health in general in Timor, they do have fairly high rates of one antenatal care visit, 86% is kind of an estimate. This was as of 2010 in the demographic and health survey, but only 22% of deliveries were in a health facility. Most women received no prenatal care after delivery, and only 21% used a modern method of family planning. That's pretty low. But in 2004, it was only 7%, so we feel like there's been some progress. So this is the data for this study that Rebecca did. We're from the National Demographic and Health Survey that was in 2009-2010. And as you probably are familiar with that survey, it's fairly standard. They use fairly standard questionnaire, sampling methods, et cetera. One thing they did do in Timor was sample so that the individual districts could be, they could make estimates in the individual districts. This shows the districts of Timor. It's kind of interesting that the rates of reported domestic violence range from about 11% in one district, Manututu, up to 78% in an adjoining district. seems a little unlikely that those are all, that that's all accurate reporting, but, you know, it's also fairly, it's not unexpected to me that, that there are going to be groups of women that are not going to acknowledge what they have, what goes on in their home. So it's a, certainly a basic limitation of any, I think, of any of this kind of research. So the objectives for this study are just to look at, in this particular population that has a big history of sort of violence in general, to see if women who experience intimate partner violence or domestic violence are more likely than those who don't to have negative reproductive health, maternal care, and birth outcomes. And also to look at this sort of corollary of marital control or controlling partner and see if they are more likely to have problems in the use of family planning. So sort of a standard approach of calculating odds ratios to look at these associations. For these maternal health and birth outcomes, the sample was limited to women who had given birth recently. There's a domestic violence module that's only part of the large DHS, and then in order to make it a little bit more likely that this would be something that was current, only women who had given birth in the past 6 months were included in that sample. And then everything was controlled for education, wealth, age, and then because these the rural-urban populations are quite different, it was stratified by urban and rural settings. So these are just background characteristics, pretty much heavily rural, 75% to 80% rural, which is very typical of the country. Most women were married, average age 29 to 34, range of education and wealth variables. Somewhere depending on the subsample, 30 to 41% of the women reported that they had experienced sexual or physical violence or sexual violence. And 9 to 13% reported some specific characteristics of a controlling husband or partner. So this result shows the odds of having a negative maternal care or birth outcome if women have experienced intimate partner violence. The first one is, let's see if I can use this. So the likelihood of having fewer than four antenatal care visits. The national norm is four visits of prenatal care, and their odds of not having those four visits for women who had, you can see the urban, I can't keep this thing going, urban versus rural populations. And for the rural group, but not for the urban group, there was a significant difference that there were an odds of about 2.3 times a greater chance of having inadequate prenatal care if for women who had experienced intimate partner violence. And I think because the sample was pretty small for the urban area, it was not significant, although there is a trend there, you can see. And similarly, in rural areas particularly, we don't have birth weights for babies, but the question was asked in the survey, was your baby very small, average, very large, or large or very large? And apparently those questions do correlate very well with actual birth weights. So for that question, again, there was a significant difference. Women who had experienced domestic violence had higher risk of having a small or very small baby. And this was, again, the sample was women who participated in this domestic violence module and who had had a recent birth. We did also look at three other variables: delivery outside of a facility, lack of skilled birth attendant, and postnatal care. And there was no association there with experience with domestic violence. God, I'm gonna stop touching that. Stand back here. So for rural, this is looked at separately for rural women versus urban women. This is the group of rural women who, looking at their family planning experience, and was there any association with intimate partner violence and marital control. So on the left is domestic violence, the purple, and on the right, in each little column, is the marital control issues. For the variable of unmet need for family planning, which is defined, you know, generally as a woman who is not using contraception but does not want or plan to have a birth in the immediate future, there was actually a decreased unmet need for family planning for perception by in rural women if they had this marital control problem. For unplanned pregnancy, women who had intimate partner violence were significantly more likely to have an unplanned pregnancy. And in the question was asked, right now, if you're not using contraception, is it because your partner or husband is opposed? In that particular, for that particular question, for the marital control, women who said they did have had these characteristics of marital control, yes, there was an effect on their family planning use. So, as you can see, these variables were quite different for the three family planning outcomes were not consistent across those two areas. And we did look for urban women, and there were no significant associations there, although there were some trends. So the conclusion for Rebecca, this study, was that it is pretty clear that in Timor, there are significant risks associated with intimate partner violence, risk to reproductive health, to maternal care, and to birth outcomes, and that it's really important that we understand that they're different between rural and urban women, and conditions of life are very different for urban and rural women in Timor, as in many, many countries, and that sort of needs to be taken into account when programs and just kind of assessments are undertaken. The issue of marital control had this interesting decreased odds of resulting in an unmet need for family planning for rural women. And in thinking about it, it seems counterintuitive when you think about it, but considering an area in rural Timor, there are very few resources for family planning, for really any kind of control a woman has over her life. And so you can sort of imagine if she doesn't have any control over her life, then she has no problem with an unmet need for family planning because she has no ability to do it or not do it. And our suspicion is that that's probably a lot of what's behind it, although it would be very useful to have some qualitative research to sort of verify that. That assumption, and also to help develop interventions for women in those situations. We felt like because the maternal and birth outcomes were limited to women who had given birth recently, we thought it did provide some evidence for causality that this experience of intimate partner violence did have an effect on birth outcomes, but of course, you can't confirm that that's what it was, which sort of, we feel like it's a little bit more evidence to that effect. I think the recall and particularly reporting bias is likely to be huge, as I think it is with any attempt to try to talk to women about this very, very, I would say private, it's not even so totally private in Timor. I think it's pretty widely known who beats their wife. But for a woman to acknowledge that to a stranger is fairly unlikely that it's uneven in terms of reporting. And as I noted before, we did have small urban sample sizes, so we don't have that much confidence in the report for the urban group. In terms of what the implications are for this particular study, Rebecca really feels that there are a number of groups, there are a number of women, Timorese women's groups in Timor-Leste who are very concerned about the problem of domestic violence and gender inequality in general, which is a huge issue there. And they feel like this is something that the indication is we really need to target women who are undergoing domestic violence specifically for these particular maternal and newborn outcomes. How to do that is a big question, but I think at least if this information is more widely known, there actually has been in Timor a whole, you know, the legislature has outlawed domestic violence, if you can imagine such a radical step, that men are not allowed to beat their wives. But we know that, of course, that it happens, and there is the very strong belief that this has to do with, you know, this country underwent many, many, many years of an extremely violent occupation, and that has something to do with the continuation of this problem. And secondarily, organizations that are working specifically with people with women undergoing domestic violence, we will be speaking with them about it. And the feeling is that there is the potential to target interventions for this group, particularly to somewhat mediate their risk of poor maternal and birth outcomes. So Rebecca would like to thank the other people that worked with her on the paper. And these are the references for her work. Thank you.
Okay, so we're actually doing great on time. And I just want to, before I open it up to questions, can someone show me where the sign-up sheet is? Okay. Is there anybody who hasn't gotten that yet? I know a few people walked in. Maybe we can continue passing it around. Okay. And then I'd just like to open up for questions. We have about 20 minutes, so go ahead.
I'm Carl Benjamin from Warren University. My question goes to Dr. Bisway. What tools were you able to use in assessing the aspects of inflammation on the polio vaccine within the rural areas? If, for example, they had it through the media, through flies and all of that, what tool were you able to use to assess how the inflammation went through? Then my second question is going to Dr. Mesa. When your students conducted a research in Laos and discovered that there was this high rate of, partner violence, especially from husband to wife, did she look at the cultural aspects of those people as playing an influence in that? Because if I take you to one of the nations in Africa called Cameroon, there's a small section, a small tribal area there, which if your husband doesn't beat you physically, then it's an indication that he doesn't love you. But the law prohibits that kind of violence. But within that cultural aspect, it's an acceptable practice. So was a student able to look at the cultural aspect of the people that she studied?
Maybe if I understand your question, you just said that.
Could you use the mic?
What do you do?
Okay.
If I understand very well your question, that what do you do to get information from the rurals, to get the information of the polio data from the rural areas? That was the question, or related to the study.
What tools did you use to assess the information spread?
We used the to as a studies. We used, you know, 30 by 10 cluster using the WHO standard format that we are applying to collect the data from for this study. This is the, and we developed questionnaires, and that questionnaires are using, you know, standard questionnaires are using, and for the providing training for the data collectors are from more than degree holders and bachelors, and also these coordinators are going to the at the regional level, and also they trained the data collectors, those who are, you know, more than 12th grade students, and they go to house to collect the data from the household. That was the question. Okay, thank you.
So your question was about the possible cultural influences of on intimate partner violence. I think it's a great question. The interesting thing about Timor is we don't know a lot about the various cultures because it was a Portuguese colony for like 400 years and really neglected. There was basically not much looked at. We do have a couple, we do have some study, a few just studies of a couple of the different cultures. And then under the Indonesian period, Indonesian military were willing, they simply didn't let allow outsiders in because it was sort of constant warfare and bad PR. So there's not a lot of information about that. I mean, it was definitely, even up until the time of independence, made up of many sort of separate little tribal groups. And I think you're right, it's probably likely that there are differences. But as far as I know, we don't know them. And I think it'd be a fascinating thing to look into because they do have very strong indigenous culture, some overarching characteristics, but others rather separate.
So the question was, how was literacy defined in the 2005 Indian Human Development Survey? And what they did is they actually administered tests to the both female head of the household and the male head of the household. And it was a standard literacy test as identified by both India and the researchers used a literacy tool. I actually believe that it was originally an American literacy tool translated into 13 different languages in India, so to make sure everybody could read and write. And then there was the basic literacy tool used, and then there was they actually gave like a standard test to that was competent through an eighth grade education level to make sure that what they reported as their education level was accurate. They did two different. They did. Sure. She asked if there was a continuation of literacy, or if it was a status. And they did literacy status. So either you were literate or illiterate. And then they did a continuation of education. So they would grade the test by what they thought was appropriate, like first grade level, second grade level, third grade level, and matched it against what year of education the participants recorded.
Share the country of Timor-Leste. And
Yeah, great points. The first point, the second point certainly is very true, and I think that's a major limitation of any study anywhere on domestic violence, but more so in some places than others. And I think your first point is also very correct. During the Indonesian military occupation, there was a lot of resources put into Timor. They built roads. A lot of it, the Timorese would say, was bent on making sure they could control it well, but they did put a lot of, and the healthcare system was far, you know, was fairly advanced, even compared to what it was post-occupation. The problem was that all of the middle-level managers and the doctors, almost all, were Indonesian. And so they all left, of course, when the military left, and that left a huge gap in the healthcare system, and that was one of the issues that had to be faced. But I think your points are well made.
Yeah, for Dr. Simon, could you say something about the relationship of your work to the current polio outbreak in Somalia and the larger polio eradication
I think it is a good question, but it is a big threat. Now, currently, the polio outbreak in Eastern or Horn of Africa. Recently, starting from May, now a new outbreak is started in Somalia, and after Somalia it goes to Kenya, and from Kenya now it goes to Ethiopia, and again now it appears in South Sudan. So this is the new tragedy that we have now in the Horn of Africa. This is a really alarming situation, and for these new outbreaks, we are working on the polio eradication projects in Ethiopia. We are developing the outbreak response activities to tackle the transmission of viruses to the country, by increasing the number of community volunteers to involve and to alert the communities. And we also the government, with its partners, WHO, UNICEF, and Core Group, and Lotharians, and others, also now immediately started to do the campaign activities every month, and repeated vaccination campaigns is underway. So, in addition to that, now alert, especially the mothers, whenever there is any case, to report to the nearby health facilities, and if the case is positive, immediately the mop-up activities is conducted in all areas. Actually, these areas are very difficult areas because it is interlinked with all the border areas. The nature of the population living is pastoralist, moving to places to places. Even though there is an international border, but the people are the same people, and they move places to places, and it is very, very difficult to control. And there is no point of control to limit the population to come and out. So because of that, we conducted a cross-border a meeting with local governments, districts. So with that activities put it in some places, you know, point of vaccination, wherever someone is coming to make a vaccination. Even though that one is done, but it is a porous border. There is no any entrance because people are coming through anywhere by closing their cattle. So actually, this is very challenging.
Let go of traditional practices. And to see that highly
I'm just curious, and then with the mother-in-law issue is like a whole other aspect of that. But, you know, children, certainly in China as well, are so highly valued that they have four grandparents and one child and one grandchild, and it's quite a phenomenon to see. But what do you think, you know, the future holds for all of them?
Yeah, thank you very much for the question. And actually, indeed, it's very, well, a lot of conflicts inside. And you can see that a lot of women in Taiwan are well-educated, but they still struggle in whether to follow the traditional rituals. And, well, I know in my school, there are some faculties, they are PhDs, and during their postpartum period, they still strongly considering whether to confront all these rituals, because they think, well, it won't hurt. Well, if you follow these rituals, probably, maybe it's protective for your future health, and it won't hurt, it's just only 30 days. So, yeah, a lot of conflicts, but, well, women still think that, well, it's okay if you just endure and then avoid doing all these things in 30 days, and probably you'll have some benefits in your future health status. Yeah, but I know it's a very, well, in Taiwan we change a lot, yeah. And all these traditional rituals are actually recognized. Yes, so I don't know, just, well, I think we'll still leave the decisions to the women themselves. And you can see that in our study we collect all these women in an urban area with good education. We still have a lot of women that live in the rural area, and I think the prevalence should be much higher compared to what we see here. Yeah, so, well, we just still investigate and trying to see what's happening inside, but so far I think I just still leave the decisions to the women themselves. Yeah, thank you.
I just wanted to add, because I was very impressed, I think we've forgotten about, like, how important traditions are, you know, and I just found it very interesting that there was so much less depression. I work with a lower class of mostly Caucasian women, but they have very little support system. And I will ask them about traditions, and they don't, you know, they have such poor income they can't even celebrate certain holidays that we do. And they do have poor outcomes with depression. Because we do use the same scale. It's interesting, too, that it's used around the world. You know, I will bring that back to my department, too, in Wisconsin, but it's just, I just wanted to say that. And maybe we need to return to that with some respect for our
question going back. Polio eradication. Why is it that the health workers didn't seem to be as informed on the value of eradicating polio as compared to like volunteers in the primary care? But there was also, I think, one chart you showed where it seemed like there was less knowledge in terms of the health of that.
Actually, from our study regarding to the source of information requested to the study population, they believe that the first information are receiving from the community volunteers. And previously it was in from the health institutions, from the health workers. That was still the percentage is high in the health facilities. But now recently, because of maybe the project, because we have deployed a lot of trained and deployed a lot of community volunteers, and the volunteers now are more active and agitated the community and providing social mobilization activities, and they go to house to tell the householders or the mothers regarding to the polio campaign activities. Maybe that could be the reason. But still, the health workers are providing, information regarding to the polio campaign activities.
Okay, well, that was a great session. Thank you all for coming, and thanks to our speakers, and hope to do something in the next.